Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 200 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Constance.
Hi, everyone. My name is Constance, and I am a recovering compulsive overeater, bulimic, and failed anorexic. Hi. Thank you, Rod, for asking me to speak and allowing me to be freaking nervous for over a month. But I'm always really happy to speak at 12-step meetings because it gives me a chance to hear my own recovery, because left inside my own head, I don't have any. And I know that's not true, just because of reality. I have been in OA since November 1986, and my abstinence date is January 8th, 1987, so it's well over 24 years of abstinence. And what I thought I would try to do is explain to people how I have been able to maintain an abstinence for all this time without shooting myself in the head or any other creative way out. I will start with what it was like. I start with childhood because that's where I started. I was a child first. Actually, I was an infant first. No, I was a seed. Okay, just kidding. And where I come from in my family of origin, and I know my parents did the best they could with what they had, and the longer I had stayed abstinent and worked on my own family of origin issues, the more I realized that it was really, really true that they really did the best they could with what they had. And with what they had in terms of parenting skills wasn't too helpful, I will say politely. And because I was able eventually, like really eventually many years later, to see that they did the best they could with what they had, I was able to have compassion for them as human beings as opposed to pure hatred as parents. And that change was really important for me just as a person living, you know. So as a kid, there are four kids in my family. My parents, I know a lot of people have heard this story already, but now that I'm going to be on the World Wide Web, there's many of you who haven't heard this great story. Lucky you. My parents, I think they really loved each other at first, but I think as each kid came along, and it wasn't our fault, but as each kid came along, just time and life-wise, it got more and more and more contentious and I'd say emotionally violent, maybe some physically violent, eventually my parents separated. We stayed with my mom, and what my experience was that my mom used the kids to get back at the dad, and my dad used money to get back at my mom. So it was kind of like, I feel like I grew up in guerrilla warfare. And because I don't think my parents, or let's say my mom, had the qualities of love, kindness, patience, and tolerance, which are the codes to live by in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are the codes I do my best to live by, and I'll talk about that, how I do that. It just wasn't a happy place to be, and it was a scary place to be, and there was just a lot of judgment and criticism and negativity and fear, constant fear over money, just constant anger over my dad, you know, just growing up hearing things like, I just don't want your brother to grow up being like your dad. I just don't want you to marry anyone that's like your dad. just really like uncomfortable, shameful kind of messages over and over and over again. And, you know, I know that my mom was just relieving her anxiety and anger and feelings, but, you know, it's inappropriate for parents to relieve them on their children, and at least probably most of that generation did not know that. So anyway, what I did, everybody knows, you're going to guess, it's not a big secret, what did I do for comfort? I went to food. And also I had, what I wanted to say is, I think parenting, it's a lot too, like, you know, I see people today, you, as parents, I don't have kids, but teaching kids how to treat each other, the children, with love and respect and kindness. And that wasn't done in my household. There was a lot of competition, judgment, criticism, heavy competition. And so I wasn't treated kindly at all. And the whole combination really left me with a feeling that I was not, I don't know how it's possible to be feel like you're worth less than nothing, but that is how I felt. Like I wasn't worth sitting in the chair I would sit in a meeting, you know. I was taking the space for someone else. There was just, like, no self-worth. And it was hard. It was difficult and painful growing up like that. So, yes, I turned to food, and, you know, it was probably the first line of defense. I think right before food, what I turned to, my brother and I used to, we had this sort of circular rug, and we would just run around the rug and spin, and that would make you high. It didn't last very long. But I think that was my first high. Maybe it was neck and neck with food. And what happened for me food-wise was I developed allergies to certain foods, and so I would sneak them at a young age because I could not stop eating them. So I know that was, you know, I was addicted already, and maybe I was 6, 5, whatever. And the consequences did not matter. Like, I couldn't match the food with the consequences. I'd break out in rashes, things like that. And how much time, what am I doing up here? Oh, but then there's questions, right?
You want to stop early.
Okay, I'll try to do that. So that was it. I was pretty much a compulsive overeater, and somehow I was not very heavy, although I did gain weight as a little kid, and I felt really fat, and I was told I was fat by one of my really skinny sisters. I mean, every day I was verbally abused. And because I didn't have the loving parental comfort to counter that, I believed it 100%. My mantra was fat and ugly. And other stuff. So, but we'll start with those. And they stuck pretty hard and pretty fast. And so that was it. You know, I ate my way through survival. And it was a survival thing. I didn't feel safe in my house. I would always look around and make sure I knew where my sister was at all times because I didn't want her to hit me or lash out at me or anything like that. So I had the hyper awareness of an abused kid. And it escalated, of course, and this is the disease. It does escalate. It gets worse, not better, over time. And that is one of the tenets of disease that has, I didn't define it, but that got defined basically, you know, starting with AA, I think. And so my disease got worse when I was a teenager. You know, I met kids that were, you know, over, you know, eating and throwing up. And so I got on that for a while, and it really didn't work too well for me. Later on, I did the colonics and enemas and herbal laxatives. And pretty much what happened with me was when I got here, I could not stop eating unless I had really, really, really made extreme effort to have a starvation diet. I couldn't do normal diets, whatever that is, because I couldn't follow rules, basically. And so I'd throw the whole thing out. If there was like one food on there I didn't feel I could eat, I'm like, can't do that one. And I would just make up my own, and pretty much a lot of them were like, it would be like liquid diets with a little food. And so they were basically starvation diets. So that was pretty much how it was for me. I would binge, purge, starve, binge, and then keep going. That was my cycle. So for me, one thing that probably helped me, in quotes, was that I was multi-addicted because I was, since age 13, I became a heavy smoker, like, right away. So I had smoking, drinking, drugs for a while, and food. And I grew up in the sex, drugs, rock and roll era. So I had all of that going on. So, just between all of that, I would not necessarily rotate, but I had all of that stuff to keep me from feeling my feelings and knowing my feelings. Like, I remember in my 20s, this one friend of mine who, she had a lot of her own issues, and I could not stick up for myself. That was a huge quality I learned at home, people-pleasing. How to get attention or any affection by doing what someone else wanted me to do. I was really good at it, and one of the reasons I think I was so good at it was, partly I think I really do feel I have a good heart, and I do want the best for everyone, but the other part of it was that the role of bad girl was already taken in my family, so I found role of good girl. And so it wasn't totally altruistic. And so, yeah, I did a lot of people-pleasing, and this one friend of mine, you know, I had a lot of issues with her because there was stuff that was going on that was not, you know, appropriate or something that a good friend would do, but I couldn't speak up. I would just be the underlying anger, you know, lashing out, and one day she said to me, "Are you angry with me?" And I said, "No, I'm not angry." And underneath, I wanted to say, "I freaking hate you. You know, I'm so mad at you." But I didn't even know. I just was not in touch with a feeling. It just acted out. And that was, I think I'm covering the recording. Sorry there. I'm going to start over. No, just kidding. Okay. So I did that. Like, I didn't have any concept of what my feelings were, even though I had been in therapy since I was, like, 17. But, you know, it's not a fault of therapy. It was just, this was the best I could do, and I didn't have any of the knowledge and experience that I gained from being in OA. So, anyway, I got to OA when I was in my early 30s. I know I only look like I'm in my early 30s, but it's not true. And it was, like, amazing because I really wanted it. When I got here, right before I got to OA, I heard this little voice in my head that said, "I'm not going to make it through another holiday season alone." And I was like, "Well, who are you?" You know, because I never heard anything calm and quiet like that. I only heard, like, "I hate you, you're fat, you're ugly, you're a loser, you're this or that." But I had this calm moment of clarity, we call it. "I am not going to make it through another holiday season alone." And I had heard of OA for quite a while, but was always too afraid to be public about it. God forbid, you know, like, I could go out and, like, pile up my foods and, you know, go to the different grocery stores, and, you know, I think people know what I'm talking about, luckily. And, oh my God, wouldn't it be great if, like, I accidentally was in a meeting of, like, accountants, and you were, like, all accountants, and all of a sudden I'm like, "Oh my God, I am not in a room of Overeaters Anonymous. These poor people." So I'm so glad you're all here, because I think you get what I'm talking about. Very comforting. So I would do that with the food. And so when I got here, I really, you know, like, people say, you know, you get here when you're ready. And really, we're not supposed to have regrets, but I wish I'd gotten here at about 17. I could have really used it then. But so the good part of it is that when I did get here, I was so into it. I really wanted to be a sponge. I really wanted to just, like, soak up everything I could. And and I would take notes and write things down, but I was not going to get a sponsor, and I was not going to do the steps, because the steps didn't apply to me, and a sponsor, like, who, I can't trust people, you know, I mean, I'm glad you're all here, but I'm not going to trust any of you, forget that, that's going a little too far. And I eventually did get a sponsor and worked the steps, and what was so brilliant and amazing about step four, which I, when I first came here and read that, I'm like, that doesn't apply to me because I never did anything wrong. Everyone did it to me. I was like an excellent victim. And when I did my fourth step, it was like, I think it was well over 100, it was about 120 pages, and it was pretty much writing about all the kind of wrongs I felt had been done to me that basically I had never told anyone. So it was like 120 pages of stuff I'd been carrying around for 3 decades. And then, of course, there's the freeing part, which is my part. And what's so great about my part is not blame, and I know people are a lot of times afraid to look at that part. And I think it's maybe people don't have the correct understanding of it. My part is freedom. It allows me to have the freedom of choice to change my behavior, to behave, speak, act, and think differently to get different results and to have a happier life. My way of feeling anger and not doing anything and stuffing it with food wasn't helping me. When I'll tell you, the year before I got here, I'll tell you how it was for me. The year before I got here, or 2 years, I had gone to a nutritionist, and she had said to me that she had never seen anyone my age who was so nutritionally deficient as I was, because I pretty much had a very, very hot relationship with Entenmann's and Häagen-Dazs, with a little bit of broccoli and chicken breast thrown in there for good measure. And so, you know, she just said to me, I can't get enough healthy food in you. You're like completely deficient. So anyway, that's where I was. And I didn't come in here like very overweight. But what happened with me was I was always either gaining weight or losing weight. That's how I was. That was my life. And that was where I put all my effort and energy. I got to lose weight. I got to be thin because then I'll be loved. And then I can get love from my sisters and love from my mom. And I can be thin like all of them. And then I'd get thinner and I would have anxiety and panic because I have a disease, basically. And then I couldn't stop eating until I gained all the weight back. And then I'd start over. And so it went like that. You know, and cigarettes really helped. And my favorite diet, I always say, was cigarettes and coffee. And so I don't know, I just started talking about the steps, and I want to just talk some about my character defects and how learning about them and growing through them is like such a, I don't know, such a wonderful experience rather than, you know, the fear I had beforehand. So, for example, contempt. I come from a family where there's a lot of contempt, which is, to me, a really nasty, angry way of saying you're better than. We used to, with my grandparents, I used to sit in Central Park with them, and everyone that walked by, my grandparents had something nasty to say or funny to say about them. Oh, look at her. Oh, and then, you know, once in a while, oh, what a smart suit. You know, I mean, they were born in the 1800s, you know, cut them some slack now, I guess. But, and I went quite along with it because, you know, I'd get attention. So it wasn't until way in OA that I realized, oh, my God, that, you know, that's not like a great example for how to learn how to appreciate humankind. And I know a lot of it I turned inward onto myself, you know, oh, whatever I'd say negatively about myself. So I first noticed contempt with my family, actually through a therapy situation. And, of course, it took me quite a while to realize that I actually had that same character defect. And I probably didn't realize it until I actually was ready to work on it. And I even, and it is, like this therapist said, contempt is a very good defense if you need one, but it unfortunately keeps people away. And, you know, in terms of spirituality, spirituality is a lot about humanity and connecting. So, you know, that contempt defect, I couldn't really connect too much with people. I used to say things like, you know, well, I'm abstinent and I'm sober, but, you know, I never had anything really bad happen with me, like, you know, a parent dying or something like that. And then I went through that and I was able to stay abstinent, and it was really painful, and I still have quite a bit of grief over it and sadness over it, and it was a really, like, icky situation. I'm not sure how much to get into it just because it kind of takes up time. But my dad and I had this sort of tumultuous relationship, like, where we loved each other, and then certain things would happen, mostly to me. I realized much later it had to do with his second marriage. And and me feeling like I was not being treated very well, so I would distance myself, and there were like two periods of time we didn't speak to each other for 10 years once, and then 12 years, and then I took this amazing, fabulous course, Outside Help, on repairing relationships between men and women, and like just a phenomenally wonderful course, and I was able to see more of the positive of what I could give with my relationship with my dad, not just what I could get. And so I started trying to find him and contact him, and it took me a while, and I would speak to his wife, and she basically hung up on me for months, and then finally I had a therapist intervene, and I got the message that my dad was dead, and he had died 3 years before, or 2 years before, and no one told anyone in my family, and it was quite devastating, and I know I've just silenced the room, sorry. Everybody take a deep breath, inhale and exhale, it's okay. There was that happened, and I've spent a lot of time since then thinking about positives of what happened in my relationship with my dad, and I actually started writing, and I've written like a whole long, long thing of positive things in my relationship with my dad, and there were a lot of negatives, and it was really difficult and painful in a lot of ways for me, our relationship, and it was tainted with this horrible, like, war. It was like I was either on one side or the other. If I loved my dad, I was betraying my mom. If I loved my mom, I was betraying my dad. And so my family that I lived with, there were just basically more people in that family to please. So it was easier to go with that side, kind of thing. So I don't know if I'm telling you how I stay abstinent. Okay, so how I stay abstinent is, first of all, I had to define what my abstinence is. That was something someone told me that I thought was one of the most brilliant things I had ever heard in my life. She said, well, what's your abstinence? And because I had binged after a couple weeks in the program between November and January, and I binged over loneliness. And she said, well, what's your abstinence? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, it was so brilliant. It's very difficult to stay abstinent if you don't know what your abstinence is. Clarity! That's amazing! So on the phone, we define my abstinence, which is and has been for 24 and a half plus years, no binging, no starving, no purging, and I don't eat sugar. I wasn't eating any kind of sugar foods for 14 years, but now I do have certain non-cane sugar sweeteners, and they don't set me off or trigger me. And I eat 3 healthy meals a day, moderate portions, and I developed an understanding and love of healthy food. I don't eat junk food. I wouldn't say necessarily that the junk food thing is part of my abstinence, but it is part of my way of life. I figure if I'm going through all this and working on myself and doing all this stuff, I may as well stay healthy. That's the abstinent part. And so for what I do for my abstinence, or to stay, you know, sane and sober emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually, I have a daily practice I do my prayers every morning, and I gotta say, it's not big and huge, okay? I'm talking a few minutes every morning. And I was taught that consistency and making commitments is one of the most crucial things one can do for their recovery, and that it even says in the AA book, we are an undisciplined lot. And I love the other part it says is the one thing we all have in common. I know everyone thinks, oh, it's our compulsive overeating. Nope. The one thing we all have in common is that we are all emotionally immature. I'm like, wow, I found my tribe. So a lot of things that are about discipline and maturity I still have a hard time with, which is like career-wise and empowering myself and being out in the world, being empowered. I still have like just resistance to that. But what I do is I can show up for a job, and it's a job that's not my heart's desire at all, but I show up and do the best I can, and I have service there because I want to be like grown up enough to pay my rent and pay bills and basically live. And, you know, I get to practice the principles of the program there, like, just being kind. And I never say, you know, if someone asks you to do something, I never say no problem, because to me that has a negative connotation because you're using the word problem, and no is your first word. So I say, I'd be happy to. And I do it all the time, and I smile when I say it, and I get along really well most of the time with most people. And when I don't, I make my amends. And so I was starting to say, you know, I have this morning thing, I do my prayers, I say the first three steps, and this was all taught to me by other people. I say the first three steps, the third step prayer, and then once I got to the seventh step, my sponsor said, okay, now you add the seventh step prayer. So I say first three steps, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. Then I have prayers for me to be able to just improve in my life in certain ways, like have more trust, to have more friends, and have a career that makes me happy, and a healthy relationship. So I do prayers for that, and then I pray for other people. And this was a great one. In praying for other people, there was this one person that I knew that I was praying for, and it was really bugging me. You know, I was praying for them to just have a good day or whatever. And the real truth was that I had contempt for this person because I felt that I could do what they were doing better than them, and I wasn't being nice to them, and we had had a couple confrontations. So, like, just from being quiet and doing my prayers, I came up with that, and I realized, no, I got to pray for me to be kind, patient, loving, and tolerant to this woman, even if I don't want to be. And so that's what I do every morning. I pray for her, and then I say for my, and I pray for me to be kind, loving, patient, and tolerant to her, even if I think I can do her job better, you know? Because it's none of my business. I have to do my part. So, I guess I'm going to try to end it. 6:10, so people can ask questions. And I wanted to read something. I read this to somebody yesterday. This is so important to me, and it's really what I'm working on now, to learn how to be this way and do this. Because in my life, like what I'm looking at now is that the type of childhood I had, it produced trauma, and trauma affects people in certain ways and has certain affects and results, and for me holds me back on being able to live a life as fully as I supposedly deserve. You know, I can't always feel like I do, but I do deserve to have a full life. And sometimes even as much as I try for myself, the past can hold me back. So this is what I want to read. It says, children develop, more literature I've read. Children develop internal power by learning to make choices for themselves based on their own feelings and having those choices validated by their parents. They develop a sense of self-worth, confidence, and competence with the growing knowledge that they can make healthy decisions. The inner self becomes their internal authority. They serve one God, that's lowercase g. This is in direct contrast to children who learn that they must respond in a particular way to the expectations and pressures of their parents in order to assure their safety and security. The dictums of the parents, rather than your inner self, rule these children. Amen. I mean, that is me. And that is like, that's what I was. I was the people pleaser, extraordinaire, arrogant doormat. And so I didn't quite, well, okay. So thank you for letting me share and babble on. Thank you. Oh, cool. Questions? And I'm going to repeat the question. Yes. Thank you. I knew someone would ask that. The question is, what was my religious / spiritual life like as a kid and what it's like now? So I could go on and on as a kid. I'll try to keep that really brief. I grew up Jewish, but we celebrated like Jewish holidays, but it was kind of like hit or miss because when my sisters were like, I don't know, older children, they decided they wanted to have Christmas, so suddenly we were celebrating Christmas and Hanukkah, and I got really confused, and it was just sort of hit or miss, let's say, and the type of religious stuff in my family was, we're Jewish, but you don't really talk about God or spirituality. We're culturally Jewish. We celebrate the holidays, and we all know about the Holocaust and stuff like that. So that was kind of, and I did go to like Sunday school and stuff, and I remember one thing my dad said when I started Sunday school is he said, your mother's just making you go to Sunday school to take, so that I get to spend less time with you. So, you know, I don't know wherever that's at, but that was kind of, that was how it was when I was a kid. We were told for Jewish holidays, you can either go to school or go to temple, but you can't just stay home and do nothing. It was like, it didn't matter, whatever you want. So, and then when I became a teenager and started learning more about history, I decided there can't be a God because the world is horrible. And so then when I got to program, it was the wonderful thing someone said to me, which is also in the book, is, it says we stop fighting everything and everyone, and that was, you know, including a higher power. And I was told, get a sense of what a power greater than yourself would be. And so what I developed, for me, it just came to me, was that it was like this big, huge, thick safety net, like, you know, the acrobats have, so that if I fell or if I was doing something scary, it would catch me. Here's what I say, like, I don't really have a lot to say about, you know, how I am with my higher power, because I feel like it's just kind of personal, and I'm so not an authority on it. I will tell you this, I've read a lot of outside literature. I'm a seeker. I personally prefer more of the Eastern style of literature, so I've read a lot of that. And I engage in certain, like, practices. I don't mean voodoo, sorry. But, like, you know, what I mean is, like, yoga, you know. I find a connection with a higher power there. But here's what I know about a higher power for me, how I know for sure it exists. It says in the big book, too. Sorry, I don't mean to quote it so much, just coming up. Someone else said to me, spirituality, or I guess a spiritual experience is being, thinking, or feeling able to do that which you could never have felt or believed or experienced before. I could not stop eating. I eat 3 meals a day normally for over 24 years. I could not stop. I couldn't stop eating ice cream. I couldn't stop. I love, you know, a friend of mine said, I love that Entenmann's, the box of Entenmann's, it's a cake for one. And so I know that. I could not stop drinking. I tried to stop drinking in OA just for it to help my abstinence. I could not stop until I went to an AA meeting. I just was going to stop for 30 days. Well, 30 days has been 24 and a half years. I could not stop getting involved with, like, insane, crazy, God bless them, totally unavailable, inappropriate men who, if they ever did become available, I would have run screaming out of the room. But I think the attraction was so much of the unavailability, because that's what I was used to. I don't go there anymore. Of course, I haven't had a date in 40 decades, but that might change if there really is a higher power, you know. But there's so many things. You know, smoking. I couldn't stop smoking. That's really gross. I don't do that one. There's just so many things where if I ask my higher power to help me, there is the help. It's beyond me. So I think that's what I'll say about that. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, if my dad was alive, would I have been able to repair the relationship with him? And I'll just say this little bit about it. I'm sure that I could have repaired my end of it. It wouldn't necessarily have been a better relationship in the end. You know, I got to say, I don't know. But I know I would have been able to make my amends. And so I'd make them posthumously. Yeah. About loneliness?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a... Thank you. Oh, that's a good... Oh, just not using food? Or...
I mean, just dealing with that whole family.
Okay, the question is... I mentioned that I ate over loneliness. I'm going to add there, I ate over everything, and I ate over nothing. So I do want to make that little point. But I mentioned that I ate over loneliness, so what do I do today to... so that I don't eat over my feelings or lack of feelings. Is that correct? Close enough? Okay, well, I did start with that. I got as far as saying the steps and the prayers. I read three pieces of recovery literature in the morning, and then I read a different one at night. I mean, really, people, I'm not talking about even a half hour, an hour a day. I know some people are heroic and do these long meditations and stuff, and whatever, that's not me so far. So, and then at night, I write one page in a journal, and I read this literature, this recovery literature, and then one page in a journal. And what's happened for me is the journal writing now has become, because of working the steps in another program, their step 11, I think it was, one of the steps, it said, write every night, write three things you're grateful for and three things you did well today. And, of course, me, I misread it and thought it said five, so I wrote five for each, and I just kept that up. So I read five. If you want to do it, do great, you know. So anyway, I write three things that I'm grateful for and three things or five, whatever that I did well today. And, you know, they really can be tiny. I took a shower today and used body lotion. I mean, that's, like, important for me because it's self-care. I grew up, like, it was important for me to take care of everybody else, but I didn't exist. So it's important for me to have good self-care, and that's even an issue I work on. Specifically in terms of the loneliness, it's still an issue for me. I'm working on making healthier friends. I used to have friends where... It was just like my childhood. I did whatever I could to take care of them, please them, get them to love me, and I always thought they were so much better than me, and I wasn't treated very well in return. And so now I'm, you know, in this process for a while of making friends who are healthier and who are more able to be loving and giving. And I will, a lot of times, I'll tell you the truth, for my loneliness, a lot of times I'm still like watching TV. But what I do more of now is I have these CDs that are meditation CDs, and I listen to them. I do call people, not that much. I'm so thankful that people call me because I just still have that fear of reaching out. And I did reach out last night to a good friend of mine because I had done something great for myself. I had done this project last night that I never ever would have been able to do beforehand. It was a creative thing, and of course when I left I felt, you know, I was beating myself up that I didn't do a good job. So I did call someone who I know knows me pretty well and knows me in that area of life, and it was really good. I felt really good afterwards. And I do, you know, reading and the tools, go to meetings, literature, writing, I want to tell you people, I do not have cravings like I used to. I don't really have, God help me for saying this, because I hope it doesn't change tomorrow, but I don't really have issues with compulsive overeating anymore. Because I have and because of the program and God and me and my help of myself, I have retrained my way of eating. So it is a habit that I have been doing almost as long as I hadn't been doing it. And so it's a habit. It's not like I never say, oh, I want more, but I don't do it. I think of my higher power and the program and my sponsor, and I just have my three meals a day, and I guess I'll end with this because I got the sign. And sometimes when the last bite is about to happen, I do get a little depressed, and then I remind myself, there's more of the next meal, or there's more tomorrow, and you will be okay, and I don't need food to fill every other feeling I have in my life. There's three meals a day and life in between. Thank you.